And welcome to episode 7 of Sleut Era.
Sleut Era!
So last episode, we told you that we'd be doing flirting. However, there was a technical issue and we lost the episode that we'd recorded. We then tried to re-record it, but it was too hard.
It was not vibing. The vibes were not vibing.
And I think it's a very strong sign of our friendship that I felt able to just be like, this isn't working.
I think I was like, thank God, me neither.
But we are back now with episode 7. So this episode is sober and slutty, and we are going to be talking about the ways that drinking, doing drugs, and choosing not to do those things influences your sluttiness in different ways.
We're going to be sharing some very cringy stories. Some of these will not be shared on the Instagram.
As ever, we will be taking your responses from our little Instagram polls.
Yeah, we've got some very interesting responses and unexpected ones, I think.
So, shall we start with a little tarot poll?
Let's do it.
Mine were, of course, on my bed from my date.
Oh, of course.
She had a great pull.
Really?
Yeah, it was really positive, which is great because I always get scared when I do it, that it'll be really shit and I'll be like, oh, you're doomed, I'm afraid.
Your whole life is fucked. Thanks for coming on this date.
The Page of Wands, and he's upside down. Newly formed ideas, redirecting energy, self-limiting beliefs, a spiritual path. Maybe you feel the seed of an idea or a general sense that something new is coming, but you're not yet ready to express it in the world. You don't need to take action yet, but play with the idea and let it grow, develop, and blossom into what it wants to be. In relation to your drinking, it's that idea of like, you don't necessarily have to be like, oh, I'm going to be completely sober, or, you know, I would never be sober. It's that being sober curious and just kind of playing around with it and testing the waters a little bit.
Me and my partner, we'd been at some family things and had some couple drinks throughout the day, and then he was on a high from the Coventry City win and he wanted to go out for a drink, which was fine, and I was looking forward to going. And then we're in the smoking area, I'm a glass of wine in and my hands are just shaking, but he was like, why don't we just go to a quieter part of the bar where it's just me and you and you can like ground yourself for a second. And then he was like, let's pretend we're on a first date and you have to like tell me all these things about you. And it really took my mind off it. Night goes on, I had a couple more drinks, but I just found the more I drank, the more I was thinking about it. So he carried on drinking and I just had Pepsis. And the next thing I know, we're headbanging to Slipknot in this like grungy goth club. And I'm not that drunk and I'm having a great time. Yeah, I think it's just being like, oh, just because I'm in this environment doesn't mean that every drink I have has to be an alcoholic drink, and if it's not hitting right, it also doesn't mean I just have to go home. Like, there is a middle ground. I never thought I was someone that could be in a club type environment without being absolutely smashed, and it's really good people watching when you're not that drunk.
Yeah, you see the depths of humanity, and that can be very entertaining.
It was incredible. My partner used to go there like once a week, so he kind of knows a lot of the backstories of each of the characters that's there all the time. Oh, it was like theatre. It was so good.
There was this one guy who used to always be in the clubs of the city that I grew up in. He was quite old. One of the clubs was called Bridge, and that was the one he went to most often. And I think he'd always wear like a full tweed suit and a hat, and people just called him Old Man Bridge. I know that that sounds like he would be very lecherous and creepy, and perhaps he was. He never was to me. I didn't really know. But I always liked the idea that he wasn't, and he was just an old man who just fucking loved the clubs.
We had an old guy at the clubs where I grew up. We called him the Silver Fox because he had white hair, but sadly he was hella lechy. But he would just dance in the corner and just like try and pick off some young, really drunk girl to dance with. I wonder if he's still alive.
I've wondered that about Old Man Bridge. The Six of Cups.
The Six of Cups is a card that takes you back to the happy memories from your past.
Yeah, actually, it does resonate. The way that I started drinking when I was younger was actually, initially I was very much like, oh, I don't really want to drink. As I did start to drink, it was with friends who I felt very safe with and really trusted. I think that's definitely set me up in a very good way for the rest of my drinking life. It does make sense getting that card in relation to drinking because I love the sort of ritual of going out. I think that was something I always really loved. There's all these rituals that I still sort of do with my friends when we meet up to do with like certain drinking games we play or certain music that gets played. And I think that's really nice.
In my final year, I lived with three other girls. When we were going on a night out, we'd all start getting ready in our own room. But then they would always all end up in my room, sharing clothes and doing each other's hair. And we had this whole thing where we would like host house parties, but we're always late to our own parties. So the party would always start in my bedroom because we'd still be getting ready. And I far more enjoyed that than anything else.
First question was just, are you sober? So the options we gave were, I'm totally sober. I've tried selectively sober, dry January. I'm not sober and never have been, or other, it's complicated.
I have been really exploring my relationship with alcohol because I do find that I can have really good nights out with drinking and really good times with drinking, but it heightens my anxiety, and I am exploring my relationship with how I feel about it. I'm sober curious.
I think I'd say I'm selectively sober in that I go through phases of sobriety where I'll say like, I'm just not going to drink for a month. And it usually comes after if I've had like a night out or something where, I don't know, I've just gotten really sad or
yeah.
I've noticed a pattern that I've been getting really sad. And it's basically just when, you know, it's not worth it when you're just not enjoying it anymore.
Yeah. For me, it's like if I'm sick, as soon as I'm sick, it just takes me back to being like between like 14 and 17 and just throwing up every time I drank and just being a bit of a mess. So I just get really upset. And then I'm like, I'm out for a little while.
What would you expect people to have said, like, in our listeners?
I feel like it might be kind of a 50-50 split, thinking about, like, in terms of the age of our listeners. Because I do think when you're younger, it's just like, yes, I drink. Everybody drinks.
So most people voted for I'm not sober, but then the other votes were split mainly between I'm totally sober and I've tried / am selectively sober. So of the people who've tried and then who are like absolutely totally sober, that's probably more than the people who are not sober and have never been.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think like you say, it's actually quite split.
I would say until I was at least 25, I felt it was like you could either be someone that drank or you were teetotal.
I think when I was younger as well, it felt like it was sort of almost a statement if you said that you didn't drink. Like I say, when I started going out and things, I didn't really want to drink. You know, I didn't feel like people didn't like me because of it or anything, but I think it did feel like, oh, I'm sort of almost making an issue. There was a vibe of like, oh, you're not very fun. And I don't know whether that was really coming from them or whether it was just a fear that I had. The group that I started going out with, you know, that kind of group who's like, come on, you've got to come out. Like, you're only young once. You're young and all young people do this. Whereas I think that's... Yeah, and I think that's probably why actually I was more comfortable getting drunk with the other group of people, because they weren't like that.
Sadly, I was definitely in your first group. This is like a peak story. So I'm 17, I'm going to Reading Festival, and of course I've got no fucking money, and I had to choose. Basically, I'd got money towards my ticket for my birthday and paid for the rest, but it was like, I've got enough money to either eat or drink. So I chose to drink. I was in the crowd for Florence and the Machine. I fainted because I hadn't had anything to eat for about 2 days, but had been drinking non-stop, smoking weed non-stop. Collapsed, and my friends crowd surfed me out. But no one left the crowd.
Bastards.
And no one came with me. And as I was being crowd surfed out, unconscious, someone stole my wellies off my feet.
So dire.
And it was a really wet year. So I come to in the medical tent. They're basically like, yeah, you're fine. Just go and eat some fucking food, for God's sake. So I leave there. but I've got no wellies. So they give me carrier bags to tie around my feet so I can walk back to my campsite. I get back, no one's there, my feet are killing. Eventually, everyone comes back from the gig, and I said to one of my friends, like, I've got these little boat shoes, but they're not going to last 5 minutes in the mud. Can we go look at some wellies? And she's like, yeah, sure. And we're walking around. Of course, it's a festival, so wellies suddenly become like fucking gold dust, and they're like ridiculously expensive. And as mentioned before, I'm very poor. So I say to her, I'm like, look, I've got like £10 that I can spend on these wellies. Can I borrow £20 from you? And I'll pay you back when we get home. And she said no. And bearing in mind, I went to like a little village school, so these fuckers all had a lot of money. And she was eating like 3 meals a day from the food stands and all sorts. And she was like, yeah, no, sorry, it's my money. So of course I couldn't get the wellies. My boat shoes broke. I spent the rest of the weekend with bin bags around my feet. Got glass and piss and shit and all sorts in my feet. Came home, couldn't walk. My mum took me to the doctors and they told me that I had trench foot, quote, like in the war. I had to wear 3 pairs of socks just so I could walk. And I genuinely don't think my feet ever really recovered.
Yes, you've still got that weird toe, which yeah. I've been telling a weird number of people about your weird toe.
Oh, I love that.
It's because I've mentioned to a lot of people I've been chatting to on dating apps that a lot of my friends are doctors. It will come up in the context of like they've got some sort of medical thing, and I'll be like, oh, I yeah. have a lot of friends who are doctors. Maybe you could meet them one day. I was like, at a party once, I made Meg crack out a manky toe. Do you find you enjoy sex when you're drunk or when you're high more or less, or what's the differences for you?
I don't really like having sex when I'm drunk. That really comes from like a trauma perspective. I used to be okay having sex when I was drunk. Post assault really weirds me out and I don't feel safe. Whereas having sex when I'm high is a really nice experience, mm-hmm. and it actually really helps because it dulls down the anxiety and trauma responses. It is definitely one of the reasons I'm sober curious. How about you? Like, how do you feel in terms of sex? And
well, it used to be I only ever had sex drunk. I think I felt very inhibited unless I had had a drink or a few, usually. The first time that I had a drink was also the first time I had my first kiss. And that was very much linked because I think it was the first time my brain quietened down enough for me to be like, oh, they're kind of fit. Let's make out. And just did it. I did a lot of like making out with people in clubs and that kind of thing. And then when I'd sober up, I would never ever talk about it afterwards. It just felt impossible to talk about it. I think as I've gotten older and more confident in myself, that's changed. Now, if I drink and then have sex, it's very much not to do with like, oh, I can't do it unless I'm drunk. It's more of a like, oh, it might just put me at ease a little bit.
So it might be a bit clumsy and fun, but it's fine.
Yeah, like, you know, I had somebody who was coming to see me when we were still living together. We had a couple of drinks and we had a bit of a smoke, and that was, I think, more to ease the conversation because we still hadn't been talking that much yet. But it wasn't a thing where I felt like I was super drunk or that it had changed the way I was acting in any significant way. Whereas I think what it probably was when I was younger was that drunk version of me felt like a version of me I couldn't access.
Now that you've said it, looking back at when I was a teenager and I like kissed the most people and like had sex with people who were my like boyfriend or girlfriend, but it was quite more likely to happen if I'd had a drink because I didn't feel that I was worrying about my body or what I looked like. I was very confident, and it in some ways I think really did help me. But for me, because I had such a complicated relationship with alcohol, it definitely also put me in some difficult and dangerous situations.
I definitely went through sort of a phase as well of making out in a club, but then there being no follow up. And I think deep down, I sort of wanted follow up and I wanted something more to happen. It probably didn't do wonders for my self-esteem. Rather than being like, oh, actually, I could pull if I wanted to, it became more of a like, oh, it's only when people are really smashed that they want to get off with me. But I think I also felt embarrassed to feel like that. So it became a bit of a cycle of things. Have you ever regretted a drunken sexual encounter? What do you think people answered?
I'd love to say it would be more no, but I feel like it would be more yes.
It's more yes. My one night stand that was actually more of a 2-hour stand. I took a bottle of wine over and we drank it between us. I was seeing somebody else at the time, but in a poly situation, who lived quite near, so I felt like relatively safe. But I just basically wasn't into it. But I think what it was I was having sex with somebody who at the time was identifying as a woman. And it was like the first relationship and the first sex that I'd had. And I was like, well, now that I've got that, I should probably do it with a man just to get out of the way, which is a horrible attitude to have about sex. And I was like, oh, I'm just really not into this. Was there for like 2 hours. I think like wanked him off and then was like, I've got to go. And he was like, what? I was just like, I don't want to be here. I'm sorry. Ran away, got the bus back to the person I was seeing's house, got there, was just like, I saw my first penis and I hated it.
Oh no.
So yeah, that's probably the one I regret the most.
I think for me was also like probably my only proper one night stand. And it was with that guy that looked like a Moomin. I was only really having sex with him to get back at my ex-girlfriend and make her jealous, like, if I'm really honest. And we'd been at a party and my ex-girlfriend had been there as well. And she dressed up as a devil. It was Halloween. And I was also a devil, but just like wearing a red dress and a headband. She had gone in lingerie and painted her whole body red. Got too drunk because she was so nervous about being nude.
Mm.
And then spent the rest of the time throwing up. So I was like, I'm going to win. So I took this guy home with me. Had sex with him. Didn't last long. Wasn't great. But then he slept over because it was like 4 a.m. And then the next day, he just wouldn't leave. I think my mum got all excited because I'd had a girlfriend and now there was this
man in the house.
And she was like, he seemed very lovely. And I was like, yeah, he's fine. You probably won't see him again. I ended up getting with somebody else and everyone was telling me I'd like broken his heart. There was no promise of a relationship.
No,
there.
Of course not.
I regret it in a sense because, like, it wasn't good, but I don't really have any strong feelings about it. And then I suppose on the other end of the spectrum, it's probably like the assault. I feel like that would have happened regardless of if I was intoxicated or not.
I think sometimes when people say like, oh, I regret something, it almost makes it puts like a responsibility on them. And I don't think it was your responsibility that it happened.
Yeah, I wish it didn't happen, but it just shouldn't have happened. But it has just made the whole thing around drinking for me far more anxiety inducing.
I think I definitely now feel more empowered having sex when I'm sober. As in, I like to remember it and I like to feel present. And I'm not saying, you know, that you can't do that when you're drunk, and obviously there's different levels of intoxicated, but I think that's probably why the times that I have regretted have been because I've been drunk. It's even outside of the context of like an attack or, you know, something really terrible that shouldn't have happened. It was a big thing for me to like take control of my own sexuality and not feel like it was just, I don't know, I was just doing it because that was the only time I could, kind of thing.
Even with a partner, it's not nice when you wake up the next day and you're like, you know you've had sex, but it's a bit hazy. And it was all consensual and fine. For me, it still leaves me with that, like, pit feeling in my stomach.
Yeah, I mean, I had someone make out with me in a club who was dead sober and I was really drunk. And that made me feel really grim the next day. And, you know, that was just being made out with. I know you're saying obviously with your partner you were both drunk and it's not the same situation, but I think it comes from the same sort of place of like, I don't really totally remember what happened. I feel a bit out of control.
Yeah, was it majority said yes?
Yeah, so 71% said yes, 29% said no. The next question was, if you're not sober, pick your poison. Alcohol, class C drugs, class B drugs, or class A drugs? What's yours?
Well, me and my partner had a debate about this because we weren't sure where Wacky Backy comes under the classes because we knew it had been changed.
Shall I look it up?
Yeah.
Class A, heroin, cocaine, ecstasy, and LSD. Class B, speed, cannabis, ketamine, methadone, and some amphetamines. Class C, anabolic steroids, GHB, and some tranquilizers.
I would say my preference is class B. I rarely have a bad experience when I smoke. It just chills me out. It's quite fun to do with like just two people, and you just stay in and chill out and have some giggles and then have a really nice sleep. Doesn't give me a hangover, doesn't make me anxious. Went on a night out a couple of months ago, had a smoke before I started drinking, and it made the whole experience so much easier for me because I struggle with a lot of kind of PTSD stuff and like worrying about my safety when I'm out in pubs. It really toned that down for me and I actually managed to be in the moment of where I was.
I think a lot of people self-medicate with various things, but you know, marijuana is one of them. I remember when I first got drunk, and it happened because I did not know how much you should mix alcohol, so I made myself a drink that was half vodka, half coke.
Cause... that doesn't surprise me at all because your drinks always put me on my ass.
And I remember like the world sort of tilting and me being like, aha, this is what it is. It made me more relaxed. It made me less tense. I think it was sort of almost like I was in that moment, I had self-medicated my anxiety. I remember once I'd sobered up, I was like, I feel almost as though, I don't know how to explain it. I suppose done an exposure therapy, but with the help of something that calmed me down enough to do it. And then it felt like I now know how to do it. And I've kind of almost unlocked that lack of anxiety in a certain way. And it was actually really useful. So even when I was in sober situations, I was able to transfer that energy across in a particular way.
Yeah, I have a similar thing now where it's like, because I've done it once where I've been quite relaxed, I know that now there is the possibility that I can go out and be more relaxed. I just have to, I don't know, like be intentional about it and...
yeah.
With people I trust and take things at my own pace.
I think if it was more easily accessible and legal, I'd probably do more edibles. The first time I did an edible was at uni. It was really sweet, actually. So I'd made friends with this guy who is still a really good friend, but we'd only just sort of become friends. And I think we did like a sort of tour as part of our uni with a show that we'd made. During that was when our friendship really solidified. And part of that was he was like, oh, I've brought an edible. Would you like to have half with me? And I was like, yeah. And I remember I was trying to read my book. I'd sit down, open the book and be like, right, I'm going to read. And then somebody would come up to me and be like, oh, a book? I haven't read a book in ages. What book is that? Do you read? Like, and then I'd have a conversation with them about reading. And then I'd move somewhere else. And then someone else would be like, oh, is that a book? Like, and eventually, I think I'd made it through like the whole of the cast. I was like, right, time to read. And I opened it up and I just remember like the page was like all wavy because the edible had hit. And I was like, oh... And yeah, it was just really nice, really chill. And I genuinely had the best night's sleep of my life. And the beds in the hostel were awful. They were bunk beds with bits of plastic on them. But still, I slept like a baby. So I think if it was more accessible, I definitely would just, do more with it.
What did people say?
People said mainly alcohol or class B drugs second, and then a split across class C and class A. So when was the first time that you got drunk?
I'd gone to a camp out when I was like 13. A guy I used to hang around with, he's actually my ex-boyfriend, but he's so, so gay. And I knew he was gay and he knew I was kind of gay and it was, he's such a sweetheart. But he used to make this drink for us and he would go in his parents' liquor cabinet and mix all the drinks and put loads of, have you ever had Campari?
I haven't, but I know what it is.
Yeah, it smells like Christmas, and we would call it Christmas, this drink, and he'd bring it in a big bottle, like a big Pepsi bottle, and we were drinking that and spinning around in the middle of this field, just basically trying to get as drunk as humanly possible. Yeah, I just got obliterated, told everyone all my secrets, all my sexual secrets, everything.
Yeah.
Me and him went into our tent to kiss, and then everyone like made up loads of rumours about what we were doing in there, and they... flipped the tent over.
God.
I was known as tent slut for the next 5 years of my school life. He still got no shit about it. You know how like women get slut shamed and then men, yeah. That like basically solidified his straighthood for another few years. And that was also the first night I smoked weed.
Do you find it okay to smoke and drink at the same time?
I mean, I've had a couple of bad nights, but in general, I think because I started smoking when I was drunk, it's generally been fine.
I think it was at uni, we were smoking and drinking, but there were two instances where I was kind of like, oh, I need to be a bit more mindful about this. One of them, I went from being absolutely fine to suddenly like having this really weird experience where it felt like the world was coming out of the back of my head.
Oh,
it was really
shit.
Difficult to explain externally. All that happened was I just went quite quiet for like not even that long, probably like 5 minutes. And then I sort of came back to myself and I was like, guys, this thing has just happened, and explained it. And several of them were just like, yeah, that's just the weed. Don't worry about it. Just have some water. It's fine. The other thing that happened was I think I got quite paranoid one night. We were watching How to Get Away with Murder, but my friend had recommended this show. He used to like stream YouTube clips and videos onto the TV from his phone. So because he'd recommended it, in my mind, we were watching YouTube, and I was watching all of these different scenes, and I was like, why do they have the same actress in every single one of these different YouTube clips? And it was really distressing to me. But then I clocked, oh, this is a TV show. And I just remember looking around and being like, no one can know that I'm high, even though everyone was high. We would always go to this one building that had these like steps that you could sit on. We didn't want to go to a pub because it was expensive, so I was like, oh, well, there's this building here and it's like got some cover, so maybe we could just start drinking there and like see what happens. And we ended up inventing this drink, which you know of and have had.
Yes,
the pink nipple. It's very specifically, can't be any other brands or it tastes horrible. Tesco value vodka, Tesco value pink lemonade. It's the cheapest, most efficient way to get drunk. Doesn't
so delicious.
Something about the sweetness of the pink lemonade overtakes the nail polish taste of the vodka. I had a real routine of like, I knew what proportion of the bottle of vodka I could have to be a good level of drunk, and it was always like really fun. And we'd like do drinking games on these steps, and we just would call it the steps, and it just became the place where we'd go and pre-drink because it was free. But I have such a like fondness for that place and that kind of routine that we had. It wasn't really to do with even the clubbing.
Yeah,
it was sort of just, it's a very nostalgic memory. I will tell you about an exciting night on the steps. So it was me, a friend from school, and a friend from work. There were two sides on either side of these steps. So it was this really big, like neoclassical building with like pillars and stuff. It's very fancy. And basically on one side, if you climb down in the right way, you can get down into this sort of a bit of ground that's lower and hidden. And that's where people would pee. Where you shouldn't pee is the other side, because it's much, much deeper and you can't get back up. So my friend from work, he went to the toilet in the pub, which was still open, that was very nearby. My friend from school who was with me, for whatever reason, was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And she went down the wrong side. She like fell. I was really scared she'd like broken her foot initially. And I was like, oh my God, like, how are you going to get back up? And she was like already peeing, like, I don't know, just staring up at me. She also had pissed like where she had to stand in order to get back up. Like she hadn't thought about it at all. I lost my glasses looking into the hole, and then my work friend came back from the toilet and was like, huh, where's your friend? And I was just pointed into this hole. It still is so surreal, an image in my mind. He just flung himself so that his feet were over like the lip of the edge, and he just hauled her out. And I just remember her bursting forth from this pit looking so shocked, like she was being birthed. It was amazing. I also peed on the steps once, and a local, I think it was a PCSO, so we were on the steps after a night out, had been pissing on them as drunkards do. And this like little PCSO's like van came up, and this guy came out and was like, well, I've heard there's been some funny goings on these steps. And I was like, excuse me, is this not a public space where we can sit? And he was like, well, yeah, I guess. And I was like, so, I'm sorry, what exactly are you telling us off for? Who are you? Like, probably went full, like, aggressive.
Wow.
Scared him off. And he was like, okay, I'm sorry. Got into his little, like, truck, went away. And I was so drunk, I'd forgotten. And then I sat back down. And then a few minutes after, I was like, oh, it's because we were pissing. Did you have any, like, routines or rituals?
I was, like, proper countryside teenager, so it would just be
a field.
Some people bring tents. My friend would always bring the bottle of Christmas. We had another friend whose mum would buy her a bottle of rum, which looking back now is insane because we were 15.
My mum, she didn't know like what alcohol the kids were drinking, so for a birthday party for a girl in the year above, she gave me a bottle of WKD to take.
Oh, no.
And I also didn't really know much about drinking at that time. I think I was still underage and I was kind of like, I brought this, and this girl did that thing very politely, but that thing where she was like, oh, okay, thank you. I tell you what, if it's still here by the end of the night, you can take it back with you.
Oh no.
And I was like, okay, that's nice.
Oh my God. My mum knew I drank and she would buy like, if she went away for the weekend, she would buy like a crate of beers, but I wasn't allowed to go to these camp outs. She went to the same secondary school as me. She grew up in the same area. She knew what happened at these camp outs. Everyone would get absolutely shit-faced, pass out in a bush, have sex with someone they shouldn't. So I always said that I was going for a sleepover at a specific friend's house, would walk to her house, then her mum would drop us off in a random village and we would go to these camp outs. I would walk miles back from these camp outs, like 2 hour walks with a hangover, and then I would go home and just sit in the shower and cry. Not because necessarily anything bad had happened, but just because I would
so dead,
so fucking hungover. She'd just think I was tired from the sleepover.
That same friend from work we once met up with on a night out. He'd moved workplaces by then, so he came with a few of his new work friends, but they were not on the same vibe. Basically, they were like doing loads of coke and drinking a lot and were like insisting that they would be okay to drive home, and he just really wasn't up for that. He went to get a bus home because of this situation with the driving, and he lived in a place called Didcot at that point. So he went onto the bus and was like, oh, is this the bus for Didcot? And the guy was like, oh, Didcot. And he was like, okay, great. His phone died during this trip, but he was like, well, that's fine, I'm on my way back. It got like darker and darker and more rural as the bus went on. And then it got to the last stop and the bus driver was like, okay, this is the last stop then. And he was like, but this isn't Didcot. And he was like, no, mate, this isn't a bus to Didcot. This is a bus to Deadcote.
Oh my God.
Didn't have a phone and apparently just walked all the way to Didcot, which was really far. And the way he described it was, he was like, yeah, there were a lot of fields. I met a lot of sheep. And I think a cow.
Oh my God.
And he was like, I got home and I really just wished I was dead.
I just feel like anyone who grew up in that area just knew the drunken, like, pilgrimage home. Sometimes you just gotta get home and you may have to walk for 2 hours to do it.
And I think when you're younger, you just have more wherewithal to do that somehow. Not just that, but you know, like queuing in the cold and all the drinking outside.
It's the depths of winter. It's like October. Of course I'm gonna go to a field and like get smashed
and not wear a jacket because it doesn't suit my outfit.
Like literally in like a strappy vest, like little trainers, and I would just get battered without a sleeping bag or a tent or anything and just hope that someone would spoon me until I went to sleep. I do like the club from time to time. I don't know, maybe it's my age now, I don't know.
The things I like about the club are things that I can replicate in my own home. Not to the extent of I will make a club night in my home, but like I like hanging out with my friends, I love the pre's, I love having a dance. I like the deep chats you have in the smoking area. And it's kind of weighing up those things with the things that I don't like, which is like the music's sometimes a bit rough. Sometimes there's lechy people.
Yeah.
It's effort, you know.
And yeah, it's like queuing up in the rain and paying loads for drinks.
And the fact is as well, I think when I was younger, you know, I started going out clubbing and things when I was 18. And it was that thing of sometimes people would have a house party if it was their birthday or something, but obviously people didn't have their own spaces to host in the same way they do now.
Yeah.
So going to the club, it was like this really fun novelty. It's great, like you get stories from it and things, but I think it is like the more you do it, the more it's kind of like, okay, but I've done it all now.
Yeah, same as last weekend. I think what I quite like doing is if we have people come stay, like when you came to stay, or like David's friends came to stay, or even last night it was like, oh, Coventry have won and we're all like on a high, let's go out.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than it being like, well, it's the weekend, we've got to go out, else we're boring. And just making it much more of an intentional choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rather than just a habit that then becomes something you almost dread.
But I feel like that kind of drunk, like you say, has a sense of nostalgia and it was fun and exciting and new. Whereas now I'm like, I've done that. It doesn't have the same sense of adventure or anything now. Like before it was like, anything could happen. And now it's like, no, I'm just going to wake up with a stinking hangover, check my bank balance and want to cry.
Yeah.
Spend 2 days recovering. Now I'm 28. It literally takes 2 days. Spend money on Uber Eats and then not drink again for another 2 months.
On the date I was on today, we were talking about this and the person I was on the date with said, oh, you know, I just feel like it's not worth the hangover anymore so much going clubbing. And I was saying what I kind of have to do is almost frame the hangover day as like an event in itself, where I'm like, oh, but I'll get to like lay in bed and watch TV and order McDonald's. But
yeah,
the problem is that it's like losing its potency, because of course you can do that anyway.
We're adults.
Yeah,
we can literally do whatever we want.
I literally did that last week and I didn't have a hangover. It was just a nice time.
Yeah, I think at uni the hangover day hits different.
Yeah, because you're in a group as well and everyone's kind of like miserable but reminiscing about the night.
It's the like the debrief.
Yes, I love the debrief.
I would always go down, crawl into my friend's bed and be like, hello, and she'd be like, I know you're anxious but I need at least 2 more hours sleep, but you could lay here. And then we would get up, we would always watch Moana. We would walk to the Tesco Express on the corner. We would always get the same meal deals that cured our hangovers. And loads of bottles of that fizzy flavoured water.
Yeah.
It's like 50p. And we would just spend the whole day like rotting. And then have a little smoke in the evening.
Yeah.
Go to bed. And it would all be fine the next day. But that was like a great day. It was
A good tip as well, which I know you've possibly benefited from my one of my many doctor friends, is to take rehydration sachets. Yes. At the end of the night. I think also prepping snacks, because that's something else, that's another part of the ritual that I love, is when you get back from the night out and you've got like the best snacks, or you order some food and you're just,
when you're hammering on the bathroom door and my partner's showering the vomit off me and you're going the McDonald's is here.
Yeah, it's all part of the experience.
Well, actually, one thing we used to do when we were teenagers is we would always cook loads of chicken nuggets when we were drunk.
Yes.
And my friend had a specific way of doing them, where he would cook them in loads of oil and slightly undercook them. And they were always so good. And I have such vivid memories of him being smashed, pulling them out of the oven, forgetting oven mitts. And it was like one of those Pyrex dishes, and he leans back, crouched down, leans back and falls backwards, drops it over the back of his head so it smashes behind him, and we're all just dying laughing. I had to explain to my mum, well, I just said that one of the dogs had knocked the dish off the side. Yeah, chicken nuggets were always a must.
I had some friends over and we'd gotten pita breads and hummus, which is a really good drunk food. It's really great. Mm. And I went to my bedroom with one of my friends who had been on the phone to her boyfriend saying goodnight. And I was like, I've got pita and hummus. And she was like, yay. And we were just eating them. And then my boyfriend at the time like knocked on the door and was like, can I come in? I think that two of the others are having a fight. And we were like, oh shit, yeah, come in, come in. And we were like hunched over, just gobbling down this pita and hummus. And then this girl's boyfriend was still on the phone talking to her. And he was like, what? I can't hear. And she was like, shh, shh, we're trying to listen to the fight. Got any slutty stories from being under the influence? Share them with us. We've had 2 responses. One is sex on a beach. Think you know who that was?
I do know. It wasn't me, for the listeners. And it was a pebble beach.
Oh.
Pebbles.
Was it good?
He said it was fine. But he was staying with his brother at the time, and he'd been on a date from Tinder, and they didn't really have anywhere else to go.
It's equivalent of drinking outside when you're young.
Yeah, and it was like one night stand, and I think it was the first time they had slept with someone after their long-term relationship. So it was just a kind of few beers, go on a date, get it out of the way. But I do mock them for it. We're going on holiday in 3 weeks.
To a pebble beach.
To the same pebble beach. So yeah, I can't wait to rip the shit out of them.
Then the other response, I had to be drunk to tolerate sex with men before coming out as gay.
I fucking love that one. I did see that one.
I've definitely spoken to other people who've had similar things.
Like people at work and stuff. I'm like, oh, this was wrong with the responses. And they've been like, yeah, been there. Seems like a common response that you're just trying to like, maybe if I drink.
Yeah, because I guess it's that other edge of the like, is it that I'm just anxious? Maybe if I just drink to dull my senses.
I do also think like, obviously in this country, we have like drinking culture is so embedded into our culture.
Mm.
And then one night stand culture becomes so embedded that I think if you've never been in like a comfortable relationship with a man, you might think, well, this is what everyone does, this is how you do it.
Do you have any slutty stories from being under the influence? I can remember one of yours if you're stuck.
Which one is it?
Anal.
Oh, yeah. So when I went travelling with an ex-partner, we had gone out for St. Paddy's Day and they'd done like this whole thing on the island. Great night, everyone in Thailand saw all the drinks come in buckets and they were serving like green buckets, but no one had any idea what was in it. We threw up in the same storm drain holding hands. It was so romantic. And then went back to the hostel, but it was a shared dorm and we did that pretty much throughout our whole trip. So there wasn't much sex that happened over the course of about 3 months. But we were really drunk and we were like, let's just do it in the bathroom. And it's like a shower room with a toilet. And we did it on the floor in there. And we were so drunk that he accidentally put it in my butt. But I was so drunk that I didn't notice at first. And the next day I could hardly walk or sit down.
What do you do to keep your pals safe and slutty when under the influence?
I think I've made a bit of a mess of this in the past in terms of being either too protective or not protective enough. And I feel like it's a really difficult line to tread.
Yeah, I think it's that thing of kind of, if you know that your friend is drunk and they go home to have sex with somebody or bring someone back, it's a very difficult thing to judge when it's your responsibility to put a stop to that.
Yeah.
You know, are they too drunk or not? Is the person they're with drunk or not? And you might not know who, that person, so not recognise the signs of them when they're drunk. And obviously you don't want to like be patronising, but you also don't want to let something happen that shouldn't be happening.
I had a uni a lot with one girl. We were very good friends in my first year. But bless her, she was obviously just having a really hard time. And using getting drunk and having sex with random men as like a kind of band-aid for it. And I was very protective over her because of experiences I'd had as a younger teen and felt the need to step in a lot. But it ultimately kind of ruined our friendship because she really resented me for it because she'd end up arguing with me on nights out a lot when I'd try and intervene. And I think at that point I was so worried about her safety that I probably got in the way when I shouldn't have done. But I think it's like a similar tactic to what me and you have used, is that we kind of have a conversation before the night out.
What you're looking for. It's kind of that thing of like, oh, are you looking to pull? Do you have like a, I don't know, a signal if you're not happy or whatever?
It's always better safe than sorry. If your gut tells you something's not right, it's likely something's not right. But yeah, having a conversation before, I think... I mean, you can say not leaving your friends alone, but sometimes that's...
In the same way that if something terrible happens on a night out and, you know, you are assaulted or whatever, you know, that's not the responsibility of the person who gets assaulted. I think it's also important that, like,
not the responsibility of the friend either.
Yeah, kind of just an acknowledgement of, like, you're operating already in a really shitty world, that this has to be a consideration. Saying that, obviously, we care about our friends and really want them to be safe. Things for me is, yeah, just checking in through the night based on vibes of how drunk someone is. And that's not even just to do, to be honest, with, you know, whether, you know, sex stuff. Sometimes a friend might disappear for a bit and then you're kind of like, oh, are you okay? Or were you crying? Or that sort of thing. With my friends who I first started going out with, I never felt like the night out was the priority. I felt like having a good time was the priority and feeling safe. And, you know, since then I've been on nights out with people where I'm like, I don't trust that with you. You know, there's some people you go out with. I mean, we've spoken about the Trenchfoot situation, but I think I try to go out with people that I'm like, I trust that if I needed help or an ambulance because I drank too much or whatever, then... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, saying that, obviously, if that's something which you're... If you and me went out several nights in a row and every single time I got absolutely hammered and, I don't know, you had to call a taxi, like, every time and all of this stuff, then obviously that would be a conversation we needed to have where you would probably have to set a boundary and be like, I'm not going to babysit you every time you're on a night out. You need to take some responsibility. But I think in general, everyone can overindulge or, you know, misjudge something. And that's kind of my general go-to.
Like you say, like having a discussion before, checking in throughout, and just giving yourself a bit of breaks. But if your friend's like, I'm out on the pool, I might disappear, go get yours.
What has your gold star been over the past few weeks?
Going back to work after having a really rough time with my mental health. It's been around a year since the assault, and that just brought on like a really bad depressive episode. But I have upped my meds, started with a new therapist. My work was amazing and really supportive, really helpful, and I went back to work last week.
Can I add something on to your gold star, which is that part of the reason why your work is so amazing is because you made the effort that you did to leave two previous workplaces that have been really horrible.
Yeah, I've put myself in a position where my workplace understands. Hey, that's my gold star.
That's a really good one. I'm very proud of you.
What is your gold star moment?
My gold star this week is I'm coming out of the end of about 2 weeks of annual leave, and I think possibly for the first time ever in my life, I've properly, truly just used it to relax. I've not done anything work related. You know, I uninstalled my socials for a bit because that's very linked to work for me because I work in marketing. I've slept a lot, which has been actually really good, and I've not felt guilty about sleeping so much. I feel so refreshed. I popped briefly into the place I work, just popped in and said hi, and everyone was like, oh, you seem so well. And I was like, I feel well. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Salute Era. We hope you enjoyed it. Our next episode is actually going to be our season finale, so we're going to do something a little bit different.
So we're going to ask our salutes on Instagram to do a little poll for us, but you're actually going to vote on what we cover. So if there's something you've really wanted us to talk about, let us know.
Keep an eye on our socials. We're at Slut Era Pod on everything. Please recommend this podcast to anybody that you meet, anybody at all. And we'll see you in about a month.
See you soon.
Stay sluty. Slut Era.